Hi, and welcome to Police Stories Podcast. This is a series of short stories about my 28-year career in the UK Police Force. Welcome if this is your first time, and welcome back if you've been following the series. This is episode 72, so done a few for sure. Thanks again, as always, for the downloads. Very good this week, and particularly good on YouTube as well. Big increase there, which is good because you can put comments on there, as I'm sure you're aware. You've got the option of buying me a coffee on the strangely called Buy Me a Coffee, if you wish to show your appreciation. But if not, it's free, so you're very welcome just to listen in. So we've talked a lot so far about all the various incidents and where I've been so far. I've already transferred from one force, my first force, up into the Met, and at this point I've done about 12 years in total in the Met, plus my first kind of 6 or 7 years. So I'm up to about 20 years service roughly at this point in my career. So I'm getting on for sure. I've spent the last 10 years or so on the Marine unit, and 8 of those on the dive team in the Met. And you've heard all about the stories from that. But I've spoken about it in a couple of episodes previously, in that I'd actually moved, my home address had moved to Scotland, even though I was still working in the Met. There was various reasons for that, and I've discussed some of those. Ultimately, my intention was to retire just a few years later, and that commute would be doable. I was flying down each week to the Met from Scotland as a 5-hour commute, staying in London for the week, doing my working week, and then flying back on the weekends, and that's how it worked. And originally I thought that was doable for kind of 3 years or so, and then I'd retire early. The reality was, as we've discussed before, it just wasn't doable. So I'd looked around at options, and as I'd already transferred once, one option that came up was looking at Police Scotland. Now, it's not the Scottish Police, it's Police Scotland. Used to be a number of different forces, I think it was 8 different forces, Grampian and Strathclyde, and are very much based on the sort of counties of Scotland. But some years, not that long ago, it had merged into one and become Police Scotland. That was certainly, as obviously the area that I lived in, I was trying to cut out that horrible commute, although I did realise it would mean some big changes. But as I say, I'd been on the dive team for a long time, and the Marine unit, and much as I still was enjoying it, I always think, a change doesn't hurt. And so I thought, yeah, maybe it was time to do something different. And to be honest with you, it was driven mainly by the commute that was just making my life miserable, quite frankly, and quite difficult to manage within work as well, for sure. So that's what I'd looked at. And I went online and looked at the Police Scotland website and realised that they were taking transferees, as you're called. This happens all the time in the UK, where people, move geographically across the country, and then transfer from one force to another. Now, it's generally pretty good news for the forces, because you can imagine someone like myself coming not only with experience, and experienced cops are actually quite hard to come by. You quite often see cops with not a lot of service, but also a lot of skills. I'd had previous, firearms, close protection, the Marine unit. I was a qualified diver. Now, most of these qualifications could be taken across, but sometimes some forces were a little bit funny about advanced driving's a classic. So I'd done my advanced driving course initially down south in my first force. And then when I went to the Met, they asked me, what sort of driver are you? I'm an advanced driver. The sort of highest level you can attain in police driving takes a good few weeks of courses, to sort of get to that point. And their answer was, yeah, but you're not Met advanced, so we can't really accept that, And, I knew that was going to be the same probably when I got to Scotland, as it was, as we'll hear. But the application form is pretty straightforward. It's online. You send it off. Of course, it's very easy for Police Scotland to check with the Met that what I'm saying in terms of service and experience was correct. And I'd had a conversation with the Police Scotland dive team as well. I'd done some work with them for a couple of weeks on a refresher course. And so there was the option of transferring across, or at least I was going to explore if there was. But it turns out, again, a classic in between forces, they decided, they'd had a conversation at a reasonably high level, I think, and they decided that wasn't on. I'd have to come up back on, you know, on the streets as a uniform cop, and then if I wanted to, I could later transfer across to the dive team. But I wasn't too upset because, as I say, I'd, you know, if I wanted to stay diving, I probably would have stayed in the Met. So I was quite happy to move on. So I did this application form. That's all done online. And then you go through various stages. There's vetting again because, you know, believe it or not, as a police officer, you might think, well, why do you need vetting? You know, you're a serving police officer. You don't need to be vetted. But of course, we all know, unfortunately, having looked at the news in the past year or two, certainly in the UK, there's been various issues where people have slipped through the net and that have actually had convictions. And unfortunately, of course, we have had several police officers that have gone on to do terrible things that possibly could have been picked up. So, yes, you had a full sort of vetting again where they want to know everything about your financials and your family history and who you're related to and what have you. They're looking for those background sort of alarm bells on those checks. But I got through the first stage and I was invited along to a place called Tully Allen, which is the Police Scotland sort of training venue, or one of them. There are various ones. That's the sort of national one, if you like, and then there's various sort of smaller ones dotted around, because Scotland geographically is a very large place, you know, and it wasn't really practical for someone coming from Shetland, for example, you know, which could be, you know, hundreds of miles away, a 12-hour ferry ride or, you know, a flight or whatever to then go to Tully Allen. So they had, you know, more localised training places available as well, depending on where you worked. But Tully Allen was the place that transferees went off to. And I was invited along initially to like a 2-day assessment centre, which is fairly normal within the police. And they test various things. You know, you're already an experienced cop, so a lot of the stuff shouldn't be too difficult to you. But as soon as you start saying test to people, you know, people get scared, you know, oh my God, you know, I might fail this test, you know, and get a bit of a panic on. So, but I was reasonably comfortable with most of the things that we did there. There's things like a communication test. So there's assessors watch a group of maybe 8 or 10 people, and you might be set tasks. And this is very similar to the recruitment process, actually, in the police. And you might have somebody who's nominated the sort of team leader, and you're handed a sheet of paper. And in fact, you get drip fed extra information. So one of the ones I think was something like there was a large cave, and the cave was filling with water, and you had the option of, like, you know, moving this stone or something to allow some of the people in the cave to leave, but not everyone could leave. So some were going to drown, and you had to decide who was going to live and who was going to die. Now, it all sounds a bit gruesome, but then they give you the backgrounds of those people, and the people within the cave would you know, have all sorts of backgrounds. So one might be, you know, a convicted child sex offender. Another one had come up with like a cure for a cancer. Then there was, you know, a young single mother who had 2 kids. Then there was a professor, you know. So they had all these backgrounds ranging from good to bad, depending on your take. And really, it was about the discussion that you had. Firstly, how could you carry yourself amongst people? Very important that you were able to discuss these quite, you know, sensitive topics with, you know, other people, your peers, without being, you know, racist, homophobic, or, you know, clearly having issues. You know, we shouldn't save that person because they're whatever, you know. So that was the sort of thing that was looked at, and really there was no right or wrong answers. It was all about the discussion, and they wanted to see how you interacted. So that was one that came up. I think there was another one, a similar line, where one of you was decided that they had they were setting up a charity, and you had a large fund. I think it was, you know, I don't know, £50,000 or £100,000 or something like that, and you had to decide how your budget was going to be spent. And again, it was there was issues there, you know, that you could spend £10,000 on this, you know, advertising, but that meant you couldn't spend money on, you know, making sure that your address was, you know, disabled friendly and that wheelchairs could access it or something like that. So again, it was all about the discussion. And on those talks, I'm pretty sure what they're looking for is, apart from this, being able to carry yourself and have a sort of reasonable conversation or sort of reasoned argument, if it meant that, you know, you had a point to get across. But it was also about, you know, if there was quieter members of the team, and this is very important for if you're going for police recruitment in these scenarios, if there's quieter members of the team there, they're looking for you to bring those in, you know, by turning it around and saying, okay, well, we've heard from everyone else, you know, what's your thoughts on it? You know, turn into that quiet member of the team to try and bring them into the conversation. And also time scales is very important. You know, they'll say you've got 10 minutes to discuss this or whatever. So, and at the end of it, they might also have prescriptive things you have to achieve. So you've got 10 minutes, and within those 10 minutes, you have to achieve, you know, how much of your budget is being spent, who is going to be voted in to be the, you know, recruitment officer or whatever it was. And again, I think there they're looking at you to, if people start going off on tangents, now I'm the last person to talk about going off on tangents, because as you'll be aware, I do it all the time, but they're looking for, you know, you to bring people back off that kind of go off down a path that's not really helpful, and also keep coming back to the fact, okay, we've got 10 minutes, but we need to now clarify and actually come up with the solutions. Who is the recruitment officer? Who is the, you know, how much of the budget are we going to spend on whatever it was? You know, so that was kind of what it was about. And then it finished up. You did your fitness test in there. That's the bleep test, 5.4, the shuttle runs. It's a relatively low level. You don't have to try very hard to sort of achieve that level. And I think I ended up with 9 or something, which was plenty on that. And then finally, you end up with an actual interview, which is normally with a panel or a board. And I think I sat down with maybe, you know, it's a mixture of ranks from different places. They don't necessarily know each other. So you might have a sergeant from one station, a chief inspector from somewhere else, you know, an inspector, and they'll all have different roles and different views. And really, they just ask you questions about yourself, but also quite often it's sort of competency based. So they'll have given you a heads up and told you before that, right, we're going to interview you on communication skills, you know, and dealing with difficult, you know, scenarios or whatever it is. And then as it goes through, they'll say, okay, can you give us an example of when you've shown good communication skills? Can you give us an example of, you know, when you've diffused a situation by communication? Or can you give me an example of when you've had to make a difficult decision that may have, you know, turned a colleague against you or something like that? And to be honest with you, if you can't come up with scenarios like that as an experienced cop, you're never going to. You know, there should be plenty in your career, even if you've only got 2 or 3 years in, that you could sort of come up and cover those options. So we went through that, and I think I did okay. Ultimately, I got a letter through to say I'd been successful and that I was invited back to Tully Allen in, I think it was about 6 months' time or something. So I had to tell the Met that I was going formally. And there was a few letters back and forward, I think, or emails, you know, between the forces organising, you know, the date that I was leaving, the date I was starting, etc. And then I was sent back to Tully Allen because at the time, and I don't know if it's changed now, it may or may not have, there was a 3-week transferee course. So Tully Allen is where all the sort of probationer training, people that are, you know, civilians, walk through the door civilians, walk out the door 12 or 16 weeks later, sort of fully qualified cops. So you're mixed in with those guys and girls, and but you're doing this 3-week transferee course, which basically brings you from English law to Scots law. Now you might think, well, the UK is one country, so surely our laws are the same. You'd be wrong. Now, I knew there were some differences, but I didn't realise perhaps quite how many. And this 3 weeks was all about sort of converting us, if you like, from English law across to Scottish law. Now, some of it is very similar. Excuse me. So things like sexual offences, firearms and Road Traffic Act are all the same. Drink drive law is the same, but a different level. So you're allowed to drink less, the level is lower in Scotland, and still drive and be, you know, legal. There's different names for very similar things. Now, the classic and the first one that they brought up, which always made us chuckle, and bearing in mind these were, you know, Scottish instructors that were sort of teaching us, they were saying, so the big one is burglary. And burglary is a very similar offence in Scotland, but it's called housebreaking. And there are, you know, there are slightly different wordings, but in effect, it's the same sort of thing. People breaking into an address and stealing, you know, from within that address. Most people know what it is. Now, the Scottish instructor has told us the reason that it's called housebreaking in Scotland is because Scots can't say the word burglary. Now, I'm not sure if that's true. That's certainly what they told us. And then they went on to, and it became quite a good laugh and a good joke, which is a good learning environment. They said, and even more so, ask somebody who's Scottish to say purple burglar alarm. And that's something, and you know, the instructors were telling us we really struggle with this, so we just called it housebreaking. And I'm assuming that isn't the reason, but it did make us chuckle, and certainly was a good icebreaker from their point of view. But there's all sorts of differences and changes. Some things have, you know, just simply different words and mean virtually the same thing. So a classic again is, you know, what would be down south in England, arson, is willful fire raising in Scotland. And there is a few unique ones as well that I've kind of never heard of, and you know, it gets very rarely used because it refers to sort of very old sort of common law. But there was another great offence called hame sucking. Now, don't ask me to spell it, and you'll have to Google it as best you can if you want to. But hame sucking probably is what in England you'd call an aggravated burglary. It's basically breaking into someone's home address and assaulting them. Now, aggravated burglary has more elements to it as well. You know, you can have all sorts of offences around if you carry a firearm with you, or explosives, or, you know, a weapon. It could still be aggravated burglary, but this hame sucking kind of covers it all. I thought that was a brilliant one, you know, never heard of it. And they said, chances are you'll never use it, but we are going to tell you about it. Another one that was completely unique to Scotland and is a fantastic power is culpable and reckless. Now, culpable and reckless is kind of behaviour that's generally reckless that will harm or could harm someone. But there isn't really a definition for what it could be. So you can fit it to whatever you think. Now, you know, certain offences are very sort of black and white in terms of you have to do this and that will be the offence of that. But culpable and reckless, you know, is that broad that it can be anything, any sort of actions or behaviour that leads to someone being injured, or could, if you were reckless about your behaviour, lead to someone being injured. So one of the examples it was given, I'm not sure it's the best example, but it was certainly one we were given that helped me get my head around it a little bit, was if you were mucking about in a flat, for example, on a first floor or second floor, and you perhaps were drunk and you knocked off a vase that fell out of the window and fell onto the floor and either hit someone or smashed, you know, right beside someone walking below. Or alternatively, if you pushed or threw that out just for fun, if you were larking around and thought it'll be a laugh, I'll throw this out the window, the open window, and the same thing, it falls on the floor, either hits someone walking below or smashes right beside them. So it, you know, it was only really, you know, a fluke good luck that it didn't actually injure someone. That could be this culpable and reckless. Now, you can fit it to all sorts of things, but it's a great offence because actually in England you'd be struggling really to come up with something like that. Now, again, you know, if you think I'm wrong, which I probably am, you know, by all means tell me in the comments on YouTube or whatever if you think there's a better way of explaining it or a better example. But that's it in essence. And down in England, yeah, you might, if somebody did that, you'd be struggling to come up with an assault because of how it was. It wouldn't really fit. So actually, when they were explaining this culpable and reckless to us, I was thinking, do you know what, that's a really good one. You know, that's a great offence. And I went on to use that several times. The big thing about the difference between English and Scottish laws is in England, a lot of the uniform policing, you are single crewed. It's just you by yourself. And if you go to an offence, you know, if you're driving down the street and a fight erupts in front of you and you get out and arrest one of the persons or both of them, you know, in terms of evidence, that's fine. You're giving your evidence to say, I saw A hit B. You know, and that is the evidence that you need to take this forward to court, potentially to charge this person. And if CPS, the Crown Prosecution Service, agree, that will go to court. The big problem, well, not problem, but difference in Scotland is you have to have corroboration of your evidence. And that is why you'll hardly ever see a single crewed cop in Scotland, which is a very good thing, in my opinion, from an officer safety point of view. So what that's saying is you need more than one piece of evidence. So technically, if I'm driving down the high street in the same scenario, I see this fight in front of me, A hits B, I get out and arrest A. I have seen them hitting them. You know, is that all the evidence I need? Just that evidence alone. Now, let's assume there's no CCTV, no one on the street has witnessed it. There are no other witnesses, no other form of evidence. It's just me has seen that person assaulting the other one. That isn't going to wash. That isn't going to work in Scotland because I have no corroboration of evidence. Now, the reality is, in the scenario I've explained, there would be witnesses. You know, somebody would have seen it. But if you take that out into like a rural location, no witnesses, no CCTV, me by myself, as a cop driving around and see two people fighting, you might be struggling on your corroboration. Because most of Police Scotland don't wear body-worn cameras. And that's a huge issue. And it's one big thing that I believe Police Scotland is, you know, way, way behind on. It saves so many issues. Not only is it instant corroboration, but also it's a massive bonus for all cops that have, you know, loads of complaints against them, because people don't like being arrested as the bottom line. So you will get complaints left, right and centre. Now, most of those complaints with body-worn camera can be negated straight away. You can just say, here's the video. You're saying that the cop, you know, hit you. Here's the video. He clearly doesn't. Show me where he hits you. He doesn't. Without that body-worn, or unless you're lucky enough that there's other CCTV or other witnesses, you know, there's that little element of doubt. And you could find yourself having a complaint against you that could rumble on for months, if not years, while it's gone through, you know, which is stressful and a fairly unpleasant situation to be in, one which I've been in many times. The general thinking is, if you're not getting complaints as a cop, then you're not doing your job. Because they used to say you need to be out there, you know, putting hands in pockets, carrying out searches, you know, carrying out arrests that are unpleasant. You know, it's very easy as a cop, you know, that if, you know, this massive guy who's frothing at the mouth, you know, that probably needs to be arrested, you know, if you didn't fancy it and you thought, you know what, I'm going to get a kick in here, you could turn away and walk away from it, you know, if you were that sort of person. The reality is, you know, we don't have that luxury. You have to get stuck in. And like I say, people don't like getting arrested, so they will do anything to muddy the water and make a lot of false allegations against cops. And of course, you know, sometimes those allegations are true. So it works for everyone, you know, this body-worn situation. So there's my first tangent of the day. And in fact, even when I retired and did my exit interview and I was asked, you know, what is the main issue with Police Scotland today? 100% I said body-worn. You've got hundreds of cops. Well, hundreds is probably too many. You've got a lot of cops sitting around that are, you know, under investigation for complaints that are clearly made up, that are absolute rubbish, that had you had body-worn cameras could have immediately been, you know, knocked on the head and that'd be the end of it. But there we go. So that's definitely an issue. But that's why you won't see cops driving around by themselves. You know, this need for corroboration. Now, down south, you just call it your, you know, your pal, your buddy, your teammate, your oppo. If someone's sat in a car beside you, in Scotland, they call it your neighbour. You know, if I'm going out in a car, I have to have a neighbour with me, someone sat beside me to provide that corroboration. There are other, you know, well, there's quite a few other things that, you know, I knew as one thing with a certain words and certain names. The classic being, I would be going for refs, refreshments. I'm going for a meal break. But up in Scotland, it's called peace. You're on your peace. You're going for your peace. Now, I thought, until it was explained to me, that it was because I wanted some peace. So I was going off to get peace and quiet. But apparently it's because peace is another word for sandwich in Scotland. So if you're going off for your peace. And of course, I would say, right, should we have refs? You know, and they kind of look at me and go, no, we're going for peace. You know, and it was a good source of Mickey taking and fun. And I have to say, with my colleagues, I never, ever had an issue with the English-Scottish thing. It was only very occasionally a problem on the street from some of our, you know, drunken locals. And it never bothered me in the slightest. You know, I've been called every name under the sun and it does not bother me at all. It will just, you know, it's water off a duck's back. It will just bounce off me. But it was actually my colleagues that were generally getting more uptight about it and that would sort of step in and have words with someone if they were getting a bit, you know, over the top about the English-Scottish thing. But yeah, generally, I didn't find it a problem at all. So they were some of the differences for sure. There was others as well. Criminal damage down south is vandalism up in Scotland. And there are, you know, various other differences as well. Again, a huge one from England down south is you have PACE, you have the Police and Criminal Evidence Act, which pretty much governs everything you do and gives you all the powers or most of the powers that you get. There are some that come from common law, but a lot of them come from PACE. We regularly, if we were arresting people from England in Scotland, or we would have people walk into the front office, which they call the front bar, in Scotland, to make a complaint or to, you know, say you should be doing something, they'd start quoting PACE to you, and either the officer or the civilian, that would, a member of Police Scotland staff, that would be standing there kind of rolling their eyes and listening to this person going on for 20 minutes about PACE says this and PACE says that, and they just let them rumble on and go, okay, no problems, but just so you're aware, PACE isn't a thing in Scotland. It has no bearing at all. We have completely different set of rules and laws. So, you know, not to worry about that one. So quite a few differences for sure. And that 3-week course for me was really good. Now, did I feel completely ready and kind of armed with all the information I needed to go out on the streets again? Pretty much, yeah, because I still knew that if someone is fighting in front of me, or if someone's just smashed a window, or if somebody deliberately drives a car into someone or something along those lines, I know that's wrong. I know that that's breaking the law for sure. And yes, I might have to go away or take a second or two to figure out what the offence is or the actual wording of the offence. But ultimately, I knew right from wrong. And I knew that if somebody did something like that in front of me, I was going to get hold of them. And then we'd worry about what it was actually called, you know, or the wording later. So, yeah, a good few differences. Now, I did the 3-week course. So I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it was definitely a good introduction. I'd already been, one issue I had was I'd been measured for my uniform some months before. Now, on the dive team in the Met, we used to set ourselves little fitness challenges every month, I think it was, you know, so you had to, whoever could row the fastest in 2,000 metres, whoever could run a particular route that was 5 miles in a certain time or whatever. And then there was one that was leading up to Christmas, and we decided we'd have a kind of weight loss challenge. Now, most people on the dive team were very competitive. I wasn't particularly, but of course I went in as well, because it never hurts to lose a bit of weight. And we'd taken it to the extremes, as we did with most things, and everyone on the team lost quite a bit of weight that participated, particularly me. I didn't win the competition, if that's the right wording, but I did lose quite a lot of weight, and I was sort of the lightest that I've ever been. And then stupidly, I went off to get measured for my Police Scotland uniform. So I turned up, you know, some months later in this uniform that I'd been measured for when I was, you know, artificially skinny, if you like. I'm not sure I've ever been skinny, but to find that my uniform was a little bit snug, shall we say, in quite a few places. There we go. I got by all right. The other one difference in the court situation in Scotland, which is quite an interesting one. Now, in England, you have at the end of a trial, you have two findings. Basically, someone is either guilty or not guilty. They're the two options. They've either done it or they haven't. You know, pretty straightforward, black and white. But in Scotland, there's also a third thing that's available to a jury or to a magistrate, a sheriff, a judge, because they're called various things depending on what level they're at. There's guilty, there's not guilty, but there's also not proven. Now, again, if you Google it, as I just have, to make sure I was right on this, there isn't really a definition of what it is. And depending on who you speak with, you'll hear a different sort of, you know, reasoning behind it. One of the ones I read, and again, I'm not sure if this is right, and if you know, then by all means, please make a comment on YouTube or somewhere like that, and we can have a look. But not proven was saying it's the same as not guilty. So if I get found not proven for an offence in Scotland at court, I'm not going to get sentenced, I'm not going to prison, I haven't got a criminal record. I've been found not proven. So in terms of the law, it's the same as a not guilty. But what it tends to suggest, reading between the lines, is they kind of think you did it. It's a bit of a weird one, really. I say, and tell me if I've got this completely wrong, but not proven means you are not guilty definitely, so you're not getting convicted of that offence. but it tends to suggest there was some evidence, or there was a lot of evidence perhaps, to suggest that you did do it. They just can't prove it. That's kind of my take from what I read this morning. A real anomaly to me, and I think, again, reading between the lines, it tends to look like in the future they're going to possibly do away with it, and perhaps keep it more simple. And the final thing, the big difference up here, or something that I'd not particularly heard of, was sectarianism. Now, it's not really something you come across down in England at all. Certainly, I never did. You know, at this point, I had over 20 years service. I'd never, ever come across sectarianism during my policing. Now, it was something I was aware of, but mainly from the sort of Irish Troubles. And my understanding is it's kind of issues between two religious groups that can lead to violence. So Catholics and Protestants, for example. And it is really in Scotland, it's a spin-off of that. You know, Ireland is very close to Scotland. There's a lot of Irish living in Scotland and vice versa. So a lot of what they do kind of crosses over. But how it shows itself in Scotland particularly is, and this is seems bizarre to me because I'm not into football at all, have no interest in it and don't support a team or anything like that. And I'm aware that, you know, down south, you know, Chelsea, Aston Villa or whatever, you know, in terms of football teams. But in Scotland, the sectarianism really comes across in their main two football teams, Celtic and Rangers. Now, these guys and girls pretty much hate each other. Rangers is very blue in terms of their colours. And Celtic is, you know, green with its Irish background. Now, those two, when you have what they call an old firm match where Celtic play Rangers, always big trouble, always lots of policing. And even the colours can cause problems. I heard of a scenario where a Subway, you know, the company, which I think is virtually worldwide Subway that sells sandwiches and things, their logo is like a green colour, which is very similar to the Celtic colour. And I'd heard a story that a Subway store had been set up in a town that was staunchly kind of Rangers and therefore the blue. When they then saw this green Subway going up, even though it's absolutely nothing to do with football or sectarianism or anything like that, they disliked this colour green so much that it got vandalised all the time, to the point that the store had to close. And I think they pulled out of the town. It just wasn't worth it. Every time they replaced their signs, they were getting windows smashed, etc. Which to me seems absolutely bizarre, but it's absolutely entrenched up here in the culture. And football's a huge thing in Scotland. As I say, something I'd never been involved with before, but it was a change that I needed to, you know, understand because I would be sort of dealing with it. So I knew where I was posted to. That was a small town on the coast and in the west coast of Scotland. And that was me fully, he says jokingly, conversant in Scots law, some of it, and feeling reasonably confident, but back on the streets after 20 plus years in uniform as a uniform cop. Now, some people will perhaps think that's a come down and that's, you know, other people think, you know, I did something wrong and was therefore fired back to uniform, because you see it on the telly, don't you, that, oh, someone's done something wrong, they're getting bounced back into uniform and they're getting posted off to some remote place. You know, that isn't the case generally in the UK, and that certainly isn't what happened with me. And as I've always said, uniform policing is absolutely the, you know, the sort of grassroots bread and butter of policing, where you'll deal with more things than any other unit within the police. And starting from next week, you'll hear how I got on, and you'll get to hear some of the stories from Scotland. Thanks for listening. Bit different. No incidents as such to talk about, but hopefully you found that interesting. Keep coming back for more, and we'll speak soon. Have a good week. Cheers. Bye.